This is Tau Center for the Arts Radio Hour. I'm Chelsea. Today we're talking to Bruce McIntosh. He's an actor, a mentor, and the founder of Meta Theater. Bruce was born in Boston and raised in Connecticut. He trained as an actor at the Neighborhood Playhouse in New York with William Alderson and in Los Angeles with Ron Burris and Charles Conrad. He was a member of the Met Theater Workshop and a member of the Strasbourg Playwrights Group. Bruce has also written plays and several independent features, and in 1996 founded Meta Theater in Taos, which began offering classes and producing plays. Through his work at Meta Theater, McIntosh focused on offering theater training with an emphasis on developing skills with local teenagers and young adults. Here's the conversation. The first thing I want to ask you about is actually Meta Theater. When did that come together and how?
You know, I moved here with my lovely and talented wife, Michelle, in 1994. And, you know, I kind of fled L.A. and was acting and doing stuff there. So I don't know about you, but I was thinking about on the drive-in that you might have asked me this. And I think, you know, if an elementary school teacher moves to Taos or a lawyer or realtor, unless they're making a career or life change, they'll probably try and do what they've been doing to keep the drive alive. So that's just how it was. You know, I had theater stuff and little workshops and performance writing workshops, et cetera, in L.A. So after we built our little place, and this was in 1996, I said, oh, let me get out of Taos News and take an ad out, acting workshop. And so that was the genesis of Meta Theater. And so, you know, some wonderful people began showing up, and then, you know, we started, well, we should do a production, you know, so we rented a little place somewhere, I can't even remember. Oh, yeah, it was a little dance studio on Gustorf, and a friend who I'd known his wife in L.A. had a graphics business, so we made a little program and such. So that's really how it began, just like, I hate when people say, it started organically, you know, but it kind of, I don't know how else to put it. It just was like also an actor doing it. The kind of stuff I did in L.A. moves here. So he keeps doing what he did where he came from with all the various side hustles, you know, of changing from a big city to a small town. But, yeah, so that went on for several years. And then I was, I don't know about you, but I like stuff to tell me what to do. Like if I had taken that ad out and had no response, then you go, oh, well, I ain't going to be doing no acting workshop in Taos. But, you know, there was steady interest, and so it just kind of naturally grew. And so we kept doing stuff and, you know, would rent places or whatever. And then it was really Pam Parker, who owns Taos Gems and Minerals, but a very highly skilled theater actor who's been here many years. And she was volunteering in the high school. And when we became friends, she said, you should come, you know, come up to the drama class. She just went up there for free. And the drama class at Taos High at that time met five times a week. So I said, yeah, okay. So I tagged along. And then within 2 seconds, I fell in love with all these amazing young people. And then Meta kind of went into its next generation. You know, there was a group of very talented young people. And they just were a little bit, there was a handful that was really, really like theater. So then you go, okay, well, maybe I got to get a little more organized. And, you know, so we made a state nonprofit and, you know, rented a space, you know, and like that. So it just kind of, that's what happened, basically.
Is the space,
the genesis,
the space that you rented, is that same space that it's in now?
Well, that, well, no, we were in various little spaces. When I first started working at the high school, I can remember saying, they were saying, well, summer's coming, Bruce, now what are we going to do? And I said, well, dang, you guys want to do some one acts this summer? And he said, yeah. So Kristen Wolf and the late beautiful man Bjorn Halvorsen had a little space. So I made an agreement to have some regular time there in a little space they had down on the bypass there near motor vehicle. And so we began there. And then these guys were very, you know, solid.
Mm-hmm.
And so that just kind of said, well, you should start looking around. And so there was a sign in a window at the current space, and the last name of the rentor, if that's the right word, was Silva. And there were two Silva young women in the high school drama that I was working with, and I thought, I wonder if them guys are related to this guy. And it was their dad. And we've since become brother from another mother, friends. And so that was in 2006. We took that space. And around that time, also being led by our board member attorney with a lot of patience, got our federal nonprofit stuff lined up, and that would be about 2006, I'd say.
Gotcha. And so that the current space you're in now is the space I know.
Yeah.
And one way I would describe what you've done in there, if you've taken a room in a usual type of building with a usual type of room, and you've turned it into a theater. You walk in there, and it feels like a theater. What was that like, turning it in, taking that room and basically building a stage?
Well, I was kind of a theater rat in L.A., having got there in 1980. So there are many storefront spaces in L.A. that have a similar vibe to that. So I kind of knew the basics of what to do, but it was really my friend Brandy Santos, who lives in Dixon. And he was part of the group, and he was a highly skilled furniture cabinet maker and construction guy. And so I was actually going to orient the seats totally differently, and he was the guy who designed the seating. He said, you should come off of that corner and have your seating at angles, and some of you listening may have been over there. And so he was right. That made a thing. And then, I went to a cool college where you would go off campus on a quarter system, Antioch College in Yellow Springs, Ohio. And one quarter, I was on a crew building a theater at the school, Skidmore College in Saratoga Springs, and then went on to work a little bit in a shop and in New York theater. So, I am not a skilled carpenter. But, I knew the basics, get some plywood, bolt some platforms together with the leg bolt. I knew the basics of a simple space. So it was exciting as it began to take shape,
Yeah.
And then Jonathan Slater, who was affiliated with the Taos Film Festival, Taos Talking Pictures, he, a lot of people came forward. He said, Bruce, over in the lot back at the recycling center, in some trailers are the old seats from the Taos Talking Pictures. When they would build additional seating down at Baton Hall.
Yeah.
Why don't you go over and pick some of those up? So I did, and stashed those in storage for a while. And, so with tremendous support from so many people, I'm scared I'm going to forget to acknowledge because,
Right.
But, so it just took shape kind of step by step. Hey, we should get some better seats. Hey, we should do. And we got kicked out. We got red tagged at a place over near Zeke's Auto. Because we had a little space upstairs there, which is illegal because you need, which I didn't know because I was so ignorant. Somebody said, Bruce, if there's trouble, how do they get out of here? Well, they go down that nice big new staircase. No. How do they get out of the second floor? So I go, dang,
Yep.
So I was talking to a guy about building a thing. But before I could do that, another guy who some of you may remember, Mark Campbell, a wonderful entrepreneur, was showing films in the space up there, really cool films. He had a very good knowledge of film. But he also pushed the envelope a little bit and had, you could have a little glass of wine downstairs, and so if a kid wanted, it was no good. And I wasn't really paying the proper attention. So somebody who supposedly didn't like Mark too much, called the blew the whistle on him, and then boys came over from the county with a nice red tag, and then, okay. So that was another impetus. Well, this current space that we had leased, it was being a few thousand dollars to make that second floor egress, and we got thrown out anyway.
Interesting.
So then it was time to, go find another space.
So Meta Theater, for me, actually, it was my introduction to theater in general. I knew nothing and was never a part of any type of theater production, or I knew nothing about theater. I was a jock when I was coming up, like in middle school, high school, college, that kind of thing. So I was not at all a theater person. I saw an ad in the paper for auditions, and also if you wanted to help on the production, And for some reason, I just kind of showed up. It was a play that Jim Hatch was directing. And that was really my first little step through the door. And then I've had many experiences there in Meta that I feel like have really formed me and how I relate to theater. So here's my question to you, Bruce. What was your introduction to theater? Do you have a specific story around that?
I don't know about you, but I was thinking about that too, which I've reflected on other times. But, you know, like I have three brothers. My next brother down, he's the kid who had the chemistry set, you know, was blowing up crap from downstairs. What is that smell? You know? And was it called Dr. Porsche by the local guys in high school because he was putting Porsche engines in Volkswagen, you know, very mechanically how do things work kind of guy. And I was always more of the arts was my deal. I could draw fairly well. I seemed to have some innate ability and writing, you know, one of those kids who was writing little stories and stuff. But really, it wasn't until I got to high school that something just, you know, kind of like what you were talking about, why did you go check out theater once you came to Taos with an athletic background, you know? Well, it was kind of the arts, and I liked good acting, because I'm really old. So what I watched was superb film acting on little black and white TVs when I was a boy of guys who, most of whom were former stage actors, you know. So, you know, something in me got stirred. And then I was lucky enough to have superb drama teachers. I mean, it was a nice town with an excellent public school And then all the stuff you're going through as a teenager, all that turbulence, you know, if you ain't, you know, on a sports team after school, you know, there's that classic, you know, thing, the social workers, that good old 3 to 6 slot, you're going to disappear smoking weed and, you know, kind of lose track and spin out. So that, you know, once I auditioned and found out, geez, I got a feel for this, and again, I'm very privileged. The 11th grade drama teacher had been an off-Broadway actor in New York. So, you know, he would look at some of us and go, yeah, you guys, you know, you got a little bit of juice, a little talent.
You are listening to TCA Radio Hour, and we're talking with Bruce McIntosh, founder of Meta Theater, actor and mentor. Let's take a break. When we come back, more from Bruce about his discovery of the stage and acting. But first, let's listen to a song from Boaz and Zito. They'll be playing in a listening room style concert in the Encore Gallery on November 17th at the TCA. Boaz and Zito is short for Jack Boaz and Eli Zito. They weave together violin, guitar, piano, and voice to create original folk tunes. Here's one called Lady Tristesse.
My killer, my hunter, my queen, I crowned you, then I throned you, then you send me to the war. Where your body is the cell that keeps me fleeing you, keeps me fleeing you. And your sirens are the key that keep me needing you, keep me needing you. Alarm goes off, the world is dark, and breathing in, I breathe you in. Your perfume and your golden ring. And leaning down, you say to me, just please, please don't forget. Singing in the morning.
You're listening to TCA Radio Hour. I'm Chelsea. Today we're talking to Bruce McIntosh. He's an actor and youth mentor. He's also the founder of Meta Theater. Here we pick up the conversation when Bruce tells us about how he discovered acting during high school.
The senior year was this amazing, quite young woman who'd graduated from Emerson College, and she was an extraordinary human being. And we all loved her. Mm-hmm. And school had a few bucks. It was in a well-to-do town, and they had a nice state-of-the-art, at that time, lighting board. You know, where the guys who ran the copy machines, they were up there. They were having fun with the dimmer boards and everything. And so there was a decent space. I mean, like, even like a place like the TCA where it's split use, it's kind of that auditorium proscenium feel. But it was nice, you know. So, and she was amazing, and she cast me in a two-character play, which I did here because I loved it so much, by William Saroyan, called I Love Getting Old. Hello Out There. And, you know, a guy during Depression, a drifter, lands in a jail cell and falls in love with the Texas girl who's, you know, makes the meals and cleans up the jail. And a couple of times, we weren't getting, like, super intense acting training, but a couple of times stuff happened to me on the stage, you know, energy ran through me, and I go, I like this. Mm-hmm. This is cool. And so that was kind of, I would say, the junior and senior year high school stuff. And plus, you know, you're looking for applause and love. Well, probably all your life you are, but especially then, you know, acknowledgement. Here's something I'm pretty good at, just like a guy who has a good outside shot on a basketball team or something. It's nice that people go, yay, nice shot, you know. So I experienced that sort of feedback loop. Oh, I do seem to have some ability in this. It's natural, and I like it. And some other people go, hey, dang, you know, you're pretty good.
Over the years, you've been doing this a long time, in all, you know, in different ways. And when you reflect on the craft, is there anything to say about that after, I don't want to guess your age, Bruce, but after doing it for 40?
I'm 106, man.
I mean, so, you know, you've been acting, 40 years?
No, I'm 67.
Okay.
And I screwed around for a couple of years before college and hit acting training in New York at age 24. So I would say that first day of class in the summer of whatever it was when I was 24 years old, that was it. And again, all this is completely, totally mysterious and accidental in my experience, the way life can sometimes work. I was at a funeral of a grandparent that I hardly knew. I mean, I had seen this person maybe four times in my entire life, and I was getting ready to go off to college, and a woman at you know how they have the, it wasn't an Irish wake, but there's a little reception after a funeral service in a Manhattan hotel room or whatever. And this woman and I don't know why I started talking to her. I don't know why she started talking to me. She was probably about my age now, in her 60s. And we started talking. And she had an accent. And she was from Austria. She was a film star in Austria and Germany, who then later came to America and was a Broadway actress. Her name is Gusti Huber, Googler. She was in, she played the mom in The Diary of Anne Frank on Broadway and in the film, and also was in Dial M for Murder on Broadway. And so, you know, we were just talking, and she was retired. But some in the conversation, somehow we got on the subject, and she encouraged me. She said, "Oh, if it interests you, you should do it," or something to that effect.
Sure.
I honestly don't remember exactly what she said, but after that, that stuck with me, her encouragement. And then the way I actually got to the acting training, which I did, which I just stumbled backwards into, you know, the creme de la creme master teachers in New York City. And that was because I stopped by my friend's apartment to say hi. And there was a young woman there, and we fell in love and got, no, I'm kidding. We just talked the most, you know, just chat or whatever the word would be. Hey, what's up? Well, we didn't say what's up then, but, you know, how you doing?
Yeah.
And she said, yeah, I just got out of a really cool acting workshop. It had a summer session at the Neighborhood Playhouse in New York. And Neighborhood Playhouse, I mean, you're talking Robert Duvall, Diane Keaton, Gregory Peck, and then whole other generations of superbly trained and magnificent actors, you know.
Yeah.
But I didn't know that. So I said, did you like it, or something intelligent, like, you know, dumb young guy in his 20s says, "Were they cool?" Or,
yeah.
She goes, yeah. So something in me, and I did so many dumb things in my 20s. But every once in a while, I did something that seemed to be guided by some kind of wisdom beyond me or whatever. So I went and interviewed to do their summer session.
Yeah.
And I did it. And it changed my life. Totally changed the course of my life.
How?
Well, on the wall of the studio is stuff like moment to unanticipated moment. Well, that's pretty deep.
Mm-hmm.
That's your life. That's not just acting, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of had I just dropped in. And for some reason, I met the guy who was supposed to be my teacher. You know, you have that connection to the point where when it came time to decide to go to their 2-year program, he said, well, yeah, I'd recommend you in, but you won't be studying with me because your last name starts with an M. But I do the acting curriculum privately twice a week at night in a studio.
Mm.
I said, okay, that's what I'm doing. And I mean, I was dumb. I went to another staff teacher at the Neighborhood Playhouse, and I said, okay, I want to study with you. And he goes, well, you went to the summer with this beautiful guy, William Alderson or Bill Alderson. Why would you want to study with me? I go, I don't know. I just want to study a lot. You know, and he said, that's like having two wives, man. Forget about it. I go, oh, okay. And that was another stellar teacher, William Esper. If you look these guys up, they're like kind of legendary. And I just stumbled into it because I stopped by my friend. If she'd gone 5 minutes earlier, I don't know. That's what strikes me about life. But I think the power of that teaching was that it was so powerful for your life, but the craft of acting, you had to be honest, which, you know, especially guys, we're not supposed to be honest with our feelings, and they told us.
Yep.
They said, you guys, meaning the young men, you're going to have trouble when scenes require sorrow because you've been trained no sorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And then to the young women, which I found to be true, and the young women, he said, and you guys, well, he probably wasn't so disrespectful, you young women, you will have trouble in scenes that require expression of rage or anger because you've been in the culture. You're not supposed to display that emotion, even though we have all these emotions 80 times a day, gender, non-gender specific. So, this is very good for you as a human being to begin that Yeah, so that was one of the main things. And then finally, I should let you ask another question before everybody goes to sleep. But there was kind of, I decided I want to go to L.A. because I had always liked films and movies, and I thought, you know, I kind of want to go out there. And so the teacher said to me, okay, when you go to L.A., you go to this place. It's like old, I don't know, lineages, or if you were studying harpsichord or something. Now, if you go to Hungary, go to, you know, Budapest and find Dr. Conrad, or, you know, it was like that.
Yeah.
And I did. And there were two books when I went to that studio, it was a film acting studio, that we were required to buy. And one was The Inner Game of Tennis, which was kind of a pop bestseller on really concentration. And the other was Zen and the Art of Archery. And that led me to Zen practice, to which I've still been doing that since back in the day.
Right.
So that's what I mean when it changed the course of one's life.
Yep.
And was it, you know, did I become an actor to, you know, do a lot of acting? Or did someone want me to become a serious Zen practitioner? And that's why they used acting to get me into that. And so, we'll send this guy down to a funeral party and talk to this lady. She'll get him into acting. Then I'll, you know.
Well, it's so neat because you really do talk about it in a way that it's about all of life and how one is in life in general. And acting and training in acting or having those experiences can inform how you wake up in the morning and how you choose to go about the day. And I hear you talk about that. I think that's really cool. I also know that you do work with youth, and you have, especially, I don't know if you were doing that before you got to New Mexico, but I think a big part of your work and through Meta has been working with youth. And I think kind of around just everything that you've been talking about in terms of, look, yeah, this is about like how to stand on a stage and speak truthfully, but how does that really relate to who you are as a person in your life and what you're going to do? Would you agree with that, with what I'm saying?
Yes.
So I wonder, what has changed for young people? Or do you think it's, you know, everything's always changing, so it doesn't matter. But in terms of if you're, you just spoke a lot about kind of you coming up in that time, discovering this craft, it leading you to different places. Do you think that's possible still for young folks?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's kind of a mission of mine because one thing that's better is the technology. I mean, when I was a young actor in L.A. and I wasn't getting any work, so you're trying to get better. So you would do college films because they have UCLA, USC, and AFI, which are, you know, these world-class film training college programs. But you would get a hard copy of your headshot, you know, your portrait photo lithographed on this, you know, like really thick, almost cardboard thing. And you'd put it in a 9x12 clasp envelope and you would mail it to an address in, you know, Westwood, California. And then a week later, you might get a phone call on your voicemail service, $15 a month thing you had when you checked it, you know, that you were going to have an audition. So it was kind of, and especially in a, you know, a car crazy, insane layout like LA, it's very, not very workable. Whereas now, and I've had this experience here in Taos, I can say, and some of the casting directors know I work with young guys, and they say, hey, Brooks, we're looking for a Hispanic kid, 20, blah, blah, blah. And I can have them meet me down at Meta with zero experience and an iPad and, you know, within an hour, send something in electronically and give them a shot, you know. And it's not always a fairy tale ending, but it has happened where a kid was, I can think of one guy in particular, no experience. He was cast, performed in a movie directed by a French film director, spent a night in a hotel in Berlin and made $1,000. And, you know, I mean, it was a great experience.
Yeah.
He didn't go on with acting, but that's kind of what you were addressing earlier. Right? Mm-hmm. If you do that once, that's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. Like, what sport were you involved in?
Did I play?
A young woman.
A lot of them. Volleyball, basketball, tennis.
Yeah.
I did all of them.
that's all to me. They're kind of cousins because the main ingredient is concentration. And I can remember being in the film acting class I mentioned getting into in L.A., and there was a wide receiver for the Oakland Raiders in there. And he was one of those smart guys looking ahead. Okay, when I'm, you know, a few years, when my knees are shot or what, you know, when it's, I'm a half step behind and it's time, what am I going to do next? Yeah. So he was training, perhaps maybe going to broadcasting or whatever he was thinking. But as soon as he got up with no experience, he was pretty good because his concentration had been honed for many years, same as yours.
From the sports.
Something like tennis, watching a tennis ball hit a racket at 38 miles an hour, you know, mm-hmm. a million times. That, you know, so you develop this thing. So I think that in some ways is harder now for the young guys because there's less body stuff going on. They're more on the screens some of the times.
Interesting.
So the concentration required to be a good actor, which was stress for us, was you got to learn how to listen, but really listen. Not like, yeah, whatever, mom, listen, while I'm texting so-and-so. No, really, you gotta really listen. And that has, and you got to listen profoundly, meaning they would do an exercise, which you probably did at Meta, you know, I share with you, repetition, where you just repeat what the other person says, basically, because, I don't know about you, but listening is hard, and listening without judgment. Oh, she's telling a cool tennis story. When she gets done, I'll tell her my really cool. Well, but I'm doing that while you're talking. Or now, especially with all the polarization people, it's very difficult to listen to someone go, you know, I bought some bleach and I'm going to go make my COVID vaccine in the basement or something. And if you have a different viewpoint, you're not listening at all to them. And they're not listening to you either. You're just... Mm-hmm. So anyway, I think that's one of the things I enjoy is just sharing that with them because, of course, if you listen well, your life will be richer. Things, you know, I kind of tease them. I say, what's the biggest, you know, in juvenile detention, which unfortunately is shut down because of COVID right now, the volunteer stuff. But I would say, guys, you know what the women's biggest complaint is about us? And they go, no, you don't listen.
That was Bruce McIntosh. McIntosh trained as an actor at the Neighborhood Playhouse in New York and in Los Angeles with Ron Burris and Charles Conrad. He was a member of the Met Theater Workshop and a member of the Strasbourg Playwrights Group. In Taos, he founded Meta Theater, which works with at-risk youth in schools and juvenile detention. Let's take a break. How about another one from Boaz and Zito? They say they play some sort of amalgamation folk music. Jack Boaz is a violinist and sometimes singer. Eli Zito is a guitar, piano, and voice player. They'll be playing a listening room style concert in the Encore Gallery at TCA on November 17th. Here's one called Montrose Place. This is TCA Radio Hour. I'm Chelsea. We've been listening to Bruce McIntosh talk about the beginnings of Meta Theater, his discovery of acting and the stage, and his experiences working with young people in their exploration of the craft. Here's more of the conversation. These stories you shared, especially about the beginnings of Meta and how all that came together, to me it seems like, and like you said, all kinds of people that just want to make something happen, not about money. Do you think that things have changed in terms of that is not appealing to folks, or it's just more difficult to do that these days, or not really?
Well, these days, if it includes a pandemic, yeah, it's totally screwed it up. I'm sure other, and I know I have experienced certain sort of silver lining aspects of the change, but... I remember somebody reminded me that I used to say something to the audiences when they would come. It's nice that we're, I think, small, peaceful gatherings are important these days or something. It was probably when we were in one of our bigger wars, you know. And so small, peaceful gatherings are not a good idea right now. They're still not. I mean, and, you know, I was approached at least once that I can think of, hey, let's do a Zoom thing. And I was like, nah. That's a hybrid, which, you know, I'm not saying that it was cool. People did a lot of cool stuff. I don't mean to criticize them, but for me personally, in my particular situation, what I'm getting at is so special people drive over, and they've made arrangements. I mean, some of them have kids, they've got a babysitter, or some of them have made an agreement with their partner, or they're coming alone. You know, they've scheduled this. They're going to show up in your parking lot or your leased parking lot and expecting and looking for an experience. And the experience they want is to be with other people, sitting close to them in a small, darkened audience seating area, and see something or experience something that will not happen again. And even if there's one of those annoying video things up in the corner with a red light and they're taping it and they, you know, sent you a download of it or something, that's, if you weren't there that night, that's it, man. It's gone, disappeared, vanished. So, I mean, that would apply to live music or poetry or many other things, just speakers or whatever. So I think, yeah, right now, Meta, the doors have been closed since the third week of March, and we just started our weekly free workshop up a few weeks ago, and we're doing it out under a tree so we don't have to wear masks. And in discussing with the board, you have to be vaccinated to come, even though we're outside at the moment. So, yeah, that jacked things up pretty good. You know, now that some restrictions are lifted, you know, I've been doing some auditioning for film and TV, but you're doing it at home, which in a way is nice. Climate change, you know, doing a round trip to Albuquerque once or sometimes twice a week. And also as an opportunity for the young people, you know, as I mentioned before, technology is great. Because, you know, I bug these guys all the time. I try and lure people into it, basically. I'll be talking to a clerk somewhere, and I go, hey, you got a nice energy. You ever thought about acting? But I just get excited that that opportunity exists in a way that when I was a young guy. But I'm kind of backtracking the other question. Mm-hmm. But the COVID thing is I am in a state of unknown mystery, in a sense, because my thought is, okay, I have friends who are writers. Let's just do a 45-minute reading. A guy wants to write his stuff. But I don't know if people want to come to a poorly ventilated small space and sit really close together and pay Meta Theater $10 for the privilege. That remains to be seen. And, you know, hey, if they don't want to come, I understand why.
Yeah.
But then you get into, well, how is the place going to survive economically with no box office admissions? I mean, which you guys at TCA are also grappling with much more demands and higher budgets and employees and something that makes it much more complex than a, you know, a little shoestring operation like Meta. But, yeah, so I think COVID sucks for live theater, basically. We're still in a quite challenging kind of a lot of unknowns.
Does it depress you?
I don't like being depressed, so I'll pretty much eat a lot of ice cream or do whatever I have to. No, I'm kidding. But there is a sense of, dang, man, well, this is what I know how to do. I mean, it must be like somebody who's, you know, in the manufacturing changes, who was a steel worker and said, yeah, we're done. You better go find a new job, man. So there's that sense of, geez, this is what I know how to do, and it's kind of impossible to do it right now exactly. So it feels really good to just have the workshop going.
Right.
And so that gives me a nice feeling of, like, it's there's a great Zen quote I like. I'm paraphrasing, but it's basically, when they serve tea, drink tea. When they put out the cake, eat the cake. So what we got is a constraint. You experience at TCA, we experience at Meta Theater, the live music venues experience. How are we going to navigate this? So I think you go, the first step is to go, well, what do we got here? What can we do?
Right.
And so the fact that the workshop exists, and the weather's still holding, and we don't have to wear a dang mask for an hour and a half. You know, that feels nice.
When you think on about Meta and that room, that small room, could you tell a story about something that occurred in that room? You know, either associated with a production. I know there are many. I have my own stories about that space. But is there something that in this moment just occurs to you that was neat?
Well, man, that's a great question. And I don't mean to do a radio silence thing on you as I kind of think. But I can remember one thing that wasn't exactly a theatrical experience, but Veterans for Peace used to rent from us on a Saturday, just a little space to meet, you know, and I became friends with the guys doing that. And I had read a beautiful guy who's no longer with us, Monty Doran, wrote a short memoir column in the Horsefly, Bill Whaley's old paper, about his Vietnam experiences mostly. And at one point in the article said, we're looking for a space. So I contacted him. So anyway, we became friends, and we had this event we would do now and then called Veterans Speak, where these guys would just, I just said, you know, talk about whatever you want to talk about. And so Monty's writing, again, memoir. So he was 18, 19 when he went to Vietnam on his first tour. And there was an 18 or 19-year-old Hispanic kid I liked a lot. So I had this idea, well, Monty should read a little bit of his stuff, but we should also have a, wouldn't it be cool if we, a guy who was actually the age Monty's speaking of, the memory of, read. And so I can remember a wonderful young actor, Stephen Ortiz, read, you know, like a page and a half of this memoir. And I thought, this is good. You know, this is good, you know. And then there's other experiences where I just saw somebody kind of fly. You know, they had one of those good nights. Like, yeah. I'm sure you know, the zone kind of tennis playing. It was all of a sudden, man, dang, I just aced. That was a good serve. I didn't know that was going to happen. You know, it just stuff comes together. And so that's very gratifying to see stuff come together for someone who's worked hard, and now tonight's a night. Oh, man, I wish everybody could have seen you tonight, kind of thing. So,
sure.
Yeah, that kind of thing. And then the audience sometimes would pull you aside and, you know, just acknowledge that they're glad they came, basically. And so that feels nice, those sorts of experiences. I feel lucky. I had quite a few of those.
I have a key. And I know that there are others out there with keys, and I'm bringing this up because the thing that I feel that is happening in there is poetry. There's just a lot of human spirit floating around in that room. I feel like I walk in there and I feel it, and it feels calm, and it feels quiet, and it feels safe, and it feels also a great amount of potential. And so there's that energy there. Like anything could be made there. Anything can happen. I'm surprised every time that I walk in and I realize that from where the door opens to the back of the stage, it's really just like five large steps. But in my mind, Bruce, this room is vast and huge. And literally anything can happen in there. And I think other people have that same feeling. I want to ask you, did you envision this becoming this kind of space?
No. I like to have a short answer once in a while, but you know, you touched my heart with what you just said, and then I was reflecting on one of the fun parts of kind of being the host of a space like that is you get inquiries. And I can remember some guy from Arizona came and did a one-man show, which I thought was freaking phenomenal. And then he did the next night. And I thought, dang, man, this has 20 minutes more than it did last night. This was a little, I got to talk to this guy, you know. But, and then an elderly couple, and I'm really old, but they were even older than me. They were well into their 70s. And they drove around with a laptop and some puppets and did, I want to say Macbeth or something, this crazy, and they came. And so, you know, that has been a kind of surprise. That, well, Taos is such an amazing place and naturally attracts performing artists. And, you know, with the way the internet is, if you Google map, it'll tell you that, well, there's three theaters in town or four theaters or whatever. So you might get an inquiry now and then. So that, I guess, would sort of be expected because of where Taos is geographically and its rep as an arts place, that you would get some calls like that. But that kind of blew me away, the quality of stuff and the experiences that people could have in, you know, it's a modest space. And I think part of it, what I learned in L.A. when I had a lease on a theater there, which basically I kind of BS my way into a wealthy friend signed the lease with me, and then he said, you know, this isn't working out for me. And I thought, well, maybe I could just, without them doing a credit check on me, just say, well, you know, I'll just take it from here and see if I can. And I did for a while, you know. And but one of the things I felt personally for me in LA was they were trying to keep guys like me out. Mm-hmm. It was like, it was a kind of razor wire feeling. Mm-hmm. And it was good for a white guy, you know, to feel a little prejudice. You go, hey, you don't know anyone in the film business. You're new. There's 1,000 better looking guys than you, or, you know, taller or more we're looking for. You know, this fight to try and mm-hmm. get to do what you want to do and make a few bucks too, you know. So I definitely, when we had a lease on a space there, I had an open door thing.
Yep.
And that was one of my favorite things. I mean, I can remember a woman walking in, and I just happened to be sitting there with a guy fooling around with lighting. And, you know, she kind of said, hey, and we talked, and she said, I have a play. I said, you got it with you? She said, yeah. I said, hey, go put the lights up. Well, let's hear some of it. And then, or you, come down and read a scene with her, or whatever. So I knew in that way I wanted to, or I like places that are open.
Yeah.
And I like places where there's no prerequisites. And I don't like something about America with the racism and the class and the inequality where certain people feel they can do cool stuff and other people feel... I heard an interview where Al Pacino, I think, said his mother said, yeah, guys like us, we don't get to do that. You know, it was a working class, single-parent household, pretty poor. Guys like you... or from these kind of families, they don't get to do that. Mm-hmm. And working in juvenile detention, there's a lot of that feeling you can sense in those guys. Well, you know, I'm kind of a troublemaker, and, you know, I'll end up working in a warehouse or whatever, you know, and I hate that. So to think that because of the technology, and because I have been lucky enough to work a little bit and know the small handful of powers that be in New Mexico, that a kid who has, or anyone who's had absolutely no experience can enjoy this and do something. And maybe, and many of them are very gifted at it, they just haven't had an opportunity. So that idea, I think, has taken hold and been fun. You know, well, actually, this modest little space, it's kind of wild what you can pull off. You know, if you just, like when you said you had a key, your key doesn't work anymore, because I had to change a lot. I go, I think I have like 48 keys. I don't even remember who has a goddamn key to this, but that's not very smart. So I had to dial it. But that's the idea. You know, you become part of the family. A native woman said to me when I gave her a key, I feel like I'm on the council of key holders, Bruce. And so that was always the idea. You know, you come here. You like doing stuff, and, well, you know, let's figure out when you can do it and how you can do it. And so that sense of openness and possibility, yes, I like that. But did I envision it exactly? Nah. Did I know it was going to unfold like that? No. But I really credit it to Pam Parker, who got me to high school and where I met these young people who were just, I found, amazing. And then they sort of led me, as I was describing, into, you know, taking further steps.
And it's so neat, the key. For me, that's, I think, really influenced me in a lot of ways in thinking about spaces, honestly. Yeah. Because you're handed the key. You belong. This is yours, too. And that whole feeling and how empowering that can be for folks. And even though now I'm going to turn in my key and then at some point soon get the new one.
Yes. Yes. You can have a new key.
Yeah. Anyway, so Bruce, thank you so much. I really appreciate your time and so enjoy just hearing your stories and your thoughts about things. So thank you.
You're so welcome. Thanks for the chance to, as my dad would say, may rest in peace, bend your ear.
TCA Radio Hour, supported by this station, KNCE 93.5 FM, streaming at truetausradio.com and our local business partner, Taos Opera Guild. We'll be here next Monday at 9 a.m. Playing now is one from Django Festival All-Stars. They will be in Taos on the second weekend of November.